자, 아줌마를 좀 마세요.
이끄대 간스.
뭔가 마트만이 하지면서요.
Your brains out since 2006 and eating your liver. It's Anime Diet Radio episode 15, Halloween special.
Also known as Anime Diet Radio Special Ed.
I was trying to growl like the Yoma in Claymore. It isn't liver, it's guts.
I wasn't sure if you were trying to growl or you were actually doing this podcast from your bathroom.
Eat it, right.
It's kind of not clear.
Something smells good around here.
So, we are here to terrify you with some really horrifying emails that we've gotten from you and comments left on last several episodes of the podcast. No, really, actually, we've gotten quite a lot. And so we're going to have quite a mailbag section today. And in fact, today we're just going to be keeping it relatively simple. We're just going to go through all of your wonderful, wonderfully delicious emails and comments. And then we're going to go through the fall season. We're going to see what's good, what's horrific, and what's just full of absolute terror. Oh, no. So, Jeremy, did we actually ever talk about what happened at our glorious Halloween bash at Anime Soufflé the other weekend?
No, we did not. Since it was the other weekend, we haven't had a chance to talk about the outcome of that, the terrific horrificness of it. Yeah, I mean, actually, it was a really good time. I mean, everybody really enjoyed themselves, as far as I can tell. Although us behind the scenes somewhat of a difficult time getting things started. There was some disastrous moments at the start of it, technical difficulties and whatnot. But after things got rolling, I think it went over pretty well. We managed to have a neatly controlled chaos going that was quite entertaining for most people.
And Ray actually had a part of it, even though he wasn't physically there. He provided us all.
No, I was serving spirit.
That's right.
Yes.
Spirit.
A ghostly spirit. He was. He actually provided some of the a good number of the background sound effects that we used. And during downtime, we played some of the one of those CDs that you provided. Which had like a continuous like number of like creepy music and sound effects and screams and stuff like that. And I know Steve really loved one of the screams on like just a sound effects CD, and so we used that at the beginning of the Name That Scream contest, I think.
Which was one of the better elements of the night, I think. The game in which we came up with several anime characters screaming their little animated lugs out in terror or otherwise, and basically gave clues and a slowly coming into focus image of that character, and contestants had an opportunity to guess what it was.
That's awesome. Yep.
So I guess we can go ahead and go on to the main dead body of our show. We're just going to have two sections. We're going to go through the mail or corpse bag, and also finally our dissection of the new season. So without further ado.
Is that a hat I see in your pants, or you're just happy to see me?
I think that's smoke coming out of your crematorium.
Oh, yes, the crematorium. Yes.
All right.
Another part of our souffle extravaganza, Fright Night.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to our first section.
Damn, that was intense.
Looking at our body, excuse me, mail bag right here, this is the fullest bag that we've ever seen in the history of this podcast.
What is it full of, Mike?
Oh, it's full of dead men's bones. I mean, words. Anyway, I think we're gonna go ahead and dispense with some of our Halloween metaphors now. And
I think everybody are already falling asleep or groaning. Yes. To death.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And so basically, we've got actually two pieces of mail from episode 13, two episodes ago, which came after we'd recorded episode 14. So we want to first answer those. And we've got three pieces of mail for our previous episode 14 as well. So we've got actually five total pieces of comments to answer today. So first off, Random 11, who manages the website milk11.livejournal.com, comments about two different things, roughly, both related to our industry comments. He says, "Hey guys, I just got the chance to listen to the latest show and I liked it. Thank you. I've been following the Genyon story around, and I've heard arguments from several different angles. You guys took a highly positive view of the company, and though I don't completely agree that everything they did was as awesome as you guys painted, I do agree that it's a pretty sad thing that they're drawing back from the anime business. Like you said later in the show, anime in general seems to be in recession, so hopefully the industry will find a happy balance before we lose any more big, vital companies like this one." And this is where I think at least one of us has to give a direct answer.
Uh-huh.
I do have one question. What's up with the super negative sentiment toward Funimation? I consider most of their work quality, and I've always seen them as one of the more fan-friendly companies out there. Obviously, some of you would not agree. So out of curiosity, I'd like to know what exactly Jeremy's comments during the show stem from. Any specific shows or actions by the company?
Yeah, Jeremy!
Well, yeah, that is a good question. And I think I briefly touched on this before in one of our earlier podcasts, I think shortly after I came on. Basically, really, it's just kind of, in many ways, a personal kind of axe to grind. And it has to do with one of my favorite shows, Kodomo no Omocha. And if anyone has ever seen the original fan subs of it, because this is the only way you could actually find this or the Raws, the original opening theme was done by a band called Tokyo. And it was, in my opinion, integral part of the show. I mean, it just was, when you heard it, you related it with the show. It was called 7 O'Clock News, and the whole beginning sequence, you know, really fit with that. What happened was, and it's understandable that they could not get the rights to this. I mean, that sometimes happens. But what they did in their release of Kodomo no Omocha, which was actually, you know, several years after it actually came out, since they couldn't get the rights to it, they recut a new intro, completely redid with another song, which I was not fond of. And that already, you know, was kind of a frustration to me on that basis. But, you know, once again, it's kind of understandable that those things can kind of happen. But in the Japanese language track, somehow or another, and it is probably related to this, there's a scene where the lead singer of Tokyo actually shows up in an episode. And there is a, you know, 5-second block, 5 to 10 seconds, where he's actually responding to the main character, and they completely cut it out, the audio completely. They didn't put in another piece of audio over it, another person redubbing the voice. They cut out that audio entirely, and in the text line of the subtitles actually had a little asterisk. That was their solution for that. And that was enough for me to say, you know, that is completely unprofessional. Understanding that, you know, they couldn't get the rights to it, but in my opinion, that was just ridiculous. I was really excited about it coming out. I mean, I went out and got the DVD right after it came out, and, you know, that happened. So that really just was with a stick in my craw, among a few other things.
Yeah, but at least they didn't get to do the Kung Fu dub. Kung Fu dub.
Right.
Kung Fu dub, you know.
Like, I don't know. I think I'd almost rather have the Kung Fu dub than just a blank moment of silence in the Japanese audio track. If anything, maybe even putting just a little note at the bottom, you know, to explain instead of like little asterisks. So
these are maybe a tribute to asterisk thing.
Well, I hope that answers
was so bad. That was so bad.
I hope that answers their question, though. That's pretty much the gist of it. There are a few other things, but that for me personally, that's my personal issue with it.
For me personally, I don't own that many. The only Funimation releases I own actually are Full Metal Alchemist, and Full Metal Alchemist generally, I didn't see anything particularly wrong with it. My guess is that you know what that thing with Kodocha really reminds me of. In some of the early ADV DVD releases, what they actually did to like
ADV again. We're talking about ADV again. Mike, think you are an industry mole.
This is like one of the bad things that they did. This is like ADV initially when you had like Japanese signs or like things that had lots of Japanese text like in a small amount of space. Instead of like putting translations in soft subtitles or something like that, what they would do is that they would put these really obvious looking CGI overlays, hard overlays, over the video.
Right.
So that, you know, in English. And it was something that you couldn't like turn off. Like it was even present if you had the Japanese language track on it. And like the first volume of Evangelion that they ever put out was like that. All their volumes of Nadesico, they did that as well. And that caused a huge stink. And eventually, ADV stopped doing that after about a year or two.
Because they put too many of the words pull.
I mean, probably the most galling thing about it was that it was incredibly obvious that it was an overlay. Like, it wasn't naturally integrated into the video or anything like that at all. It was so freaking obvious.
Yeah.
And I guess it's even more obvious when it's just simply a total audio dropout, like it was in the case of Kodocha. And so, I mean, I guess it's sort of like, but though in the case of Kodocha, this is not the first time in television DVD releases that they couldn't get the rights to all the music. It happens to a lot of American television shows as well. And it's the reason why Macross 7 has never made it to the United States, ever.
Too many songs on it.
Right.
Mm. They didn't get the right for a Speed Grapher either.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, that was an American song was the biggest issue with that. Duran Duran, actually, Girls on Film. That's a really good song for that, in my opinion. I mean, it really, really fit that. But yeah, not to go too much on this again, but there were some other issues with the translation, too, of that particular show and others. I mean, just the fact of their handling of, Shaman King and some other titles, the four kids.
I think people
version.
Had Southern accent, right? People had, like, Southern accent.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's ADV. That's because ADV's dub studio and all their dub actors are from Texas. And
no, but I'm saying that some characters really purposely made a Southern accent. In one of the old Sailor Moon, like TV Sailor, they play Sailor Moon on TV, right? Uh-huh. And then one of the friends actually had a fake. We weren't talking about real Southern accent. We were talking about fake Southern accent.
See.
And this was American, please.
Yeah. Well, I hope that answers your question, Random 11, as to why at least one of us seems to have a vendetta about Funimation.
Yay.
It's nothing personal for me anyway.
She's an industry mole for some other company.
Yeah, I think Genion hired us as a last ditch effort to try to get you to buy enough DVDs to like basically like bring them back in business. So that's why we're so positive.
There's a subliminal message playing in the background, but you just can't hear it right now. Mm-hmm. But it's already in your brain.
I bought my Hibane Renmai Deluxe DVD box set. What have you done?
Precisely.
Yeah. All right. Next up, Korosora simply complains about not about us really, more about somebody we sort of mentioned. I hate Answer Man. He's so pro-capitalization and not ashamed to flaunt his opinions around like he is the biggest e-cock around.
Just kidding.
Korasora is the proprietor of g.animeblogger.net. So,
delicious.
I hope Answer Man is not exactly listening right now. But,
no, but you know, he has infiltrated our studio somewhere. You know, it's like Nerf, okay? He's somewhere with guns. He's guys with guns and all that stuff. So, Mike, please, get into an EVA now.
Yes, I'm already in my plug suit, and I'm getting into my entry plug right now. The gurgling you hear is me drowning in LCL.
Hey, please imagine Mike in a plug suit.
Yeah, I'm trying not to do that right now.
To respond to Korasora, I don't think our linking to Answer Man, because I believe what that's referring to is in the show notes. I provided a couple of links to a couple of Answer Man columns. We basically used that as our jumping off point to start off our discussion. Our linking of him does not necessarily mean that we agree with him. Personally, having read a few of his columns, he does tend to be a bit more pro-industry than a lot of the fan community, seeing that he does belong to Anime News Network, which is a very heavily industry-supported site similar to AnimeOnDVD.com. And he's been on record as saying that the biggest problem with indie industry right now essentially is piracy, and particularly fan subs. Mm-hmm. And that's not... two things, fan subs and, of course, you know, counterfeit DVDs made in Hong Kong and in China. And the latter certainly is a serious problem.
Indeed.
For the entire movie industry, yeah, wherever you are.
Right.
But the former, of course, we've talked about it before, you know, it's a mixed bag. You know,
right.
I really do think that the industry both lives and dies by it.
Exactly.
And so I think any reasonable stance on it needs to take into account that dual factor of the role of fan subs, and it's not necessarily so clear-cut, maybe. And I wouldn't say I personally hate Answer Man. I know some of my fellow members of the Anime Blogger Coalition think he's a huge blowhard as well, but it's not something I have a personal stake in. It's just that I felt that his articles, which were in response to the Genion crack-up, was just a good place to begin our discussion. That's my official answer. What do you guys have anything to add?
No, I'd pretty much say that pretty much sums it up. I mean, it was just for information's sake primarily, and wasn't in support of any of his ideas. We just used it as a jump off point. So I think we can move on from that.
Yeah, I just want to say that anybody who hates fan subs need to go back and crawl under the rock that they came out from, because without fan subs, son, you wouldn't be talking about this stuff. You wouldn't be here. You wouldn't have a job, son.
Okay. Actually, Ray, why don't you read Beinu's first comment aloud for moving on to episode 14?
Okay, so I am reading the next comment. Well, we got two comments, but let's read one of them first. Beinu, from our friend at AnimeGenesis.com and podcast, please go and listen to a podcast too. They're great. They're very good. They're very good. Anyway, Beinu says, what you guys said about the anime industry and the market turning toward more mainstream titles and less on the niche titles worries me after a story I recently read on Anime News Network about Japan asking America to stop illegal net releases. If companies stop focusing on niche titles or stop caring about them altogether, and if something happens with the whole Japan wanting America to step in and help fight against fan subs, we're in for very dark times. Very dark times indeed. I felt like a problem like this was going to come up after what happened to Genyon. Guys?
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously one of our concerns. We hope that with the you know, difference between the two countries and the unwillingness of a lot of the Japanese companies to typically get involved in our distribution issues, that will kind of be a barrier that it will continue on, but it is a concern.
In other words, we hope the law somehow protect the pirates.
Pretty much, yeah.
We still want to sail the seven seas of internet and fansub.
For the purpose of being able to see shows before they actually come out here in their original form, before, you know, some industry, some company gets their hands on them and basically releases something that's not really true to its original form. So
yeah, that's right. It's not like every one of us can go to Japan and actually order cable TV in Japan.
true that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not like every one of us can afford a satellite. a Nerf computer or a ghost in the shell, or like a network from Section 9.
You know? If I'm not mistaken, Mike, too, and I might be bringing up something here that I might not be really prepared to talk about, but I think one of our members over at Anime Soufflé, who's actually been involved in the industry for a while and knows quite a bit about it, Kat was actually talking about our last meeting about, I think he may have already gone at this point, about that some politicians possibly coming in power in Japan that are really more on the side of the fans and of the anime.
Really?
Fans. So. Oh. So this could be something that I think he was talking about there may even be a law that would actually protect fan subs being able to be released even as the anime is still it has been picked up, has been licensed, and hasn't been released. That's what he was saying, which would be great, but at least from our point of view, I mean, I'm sure the industry really wouldn't much care for that, but that was what he was saying. I don't know if there's any validity in that, and I couldn't tell you who he was talking about.
Well, you know, technically, we all want the fan subs to kind of stop after a certain show, either show has come out.
After it's actually come out, yeah. But this was talking about actually where companies have picked up a series and have not released it, have actually sat on the... Now, I wouldn't necessarily go that far. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe if it's been, you know, licensed, maybe it should, you know, stop being fans of. Maybe. But
I don't know. Yeah.
I know I am watching a couple series that have been licensed and, you know, are... are past that, you know, past the point of what's been released. Namely, like, Naruto and Bleach.
Yeah, so. Well, we're pirates. Yeah. Take off that ridiculous pirate hat you have, Jeremy. Come on. Get a real pirate hat.
You know, it was
hat.
Given to me by Jack Sparrow. You know, and he's actually
Captain
doing the whole...
Jack.
Doraemon thing.
I just continue, yeah. And Benyu next said, I've been having problems with sploggers. Wow. And I didn't even know what it was. Now, I know what to call it. I get weird traffic and links from all types of weird spam sites that show up in my referral links for the Anime Genesis site. I've been trying to get rid of them, but now I don't know how. I didn't even know there was a plug-in to stop sploggers. I'll see what I can figure out and let you guys know if I find anything that works.
You know, it's funny. I did a little research on this, and I actually found there is a cure for sploggers. It actually comes in a cream form. you can order it through your local pharmacy, because I had a bad case of sploggers recently, too. And I didn't know what to call it either. But, you know, I went to the doctor, and he said, yeah, you've got a bad case of sploggers. So
I was able to stop one major attack that we had the other just last night, actually, because there is a feature in WordPress that does prevent anybody who fits a certain criteria from posting comments or trackbacks. So we were attacked yesterday, and we are once again going to name names. blog.animehomeplanet.com. They tried to basically steal almost every single article on our website. At one point, there were something like 30 or 40 trackbacks in the comments section from them. Fortunately, I was able to eliminate them all within 5 minutes, and they have never come back again once I put them on the blacklist. So at least that aspect is something that you can fix if just from within WordPress. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's coming from Neo. I mean, Mike.
And so, yeah, that's one solution. I hope one day they'll be able to fix anti-leech to a degree where it won't cause any problems. But anyway, why don't we go on and... Jeremy, why don't you read Dan's email?
Okay, I'll do it. Okay, Zeno. Moe draws, yes.
He's a man after your own heart. He's a man after.
Yeah, and wink and blinking eyes. But anyway, okay. Seriously though, my opinions regarding the stay on anime in US is this. They need to learn how to market properly and not be afraid to take risks. They have these trailers that they put on DVDs, but why not put one well-placed commercial doing anime on Adult Swim? Ah, they're relying too much on word of mouth, web reviews, or on the people who have seen fan subs with the hope that those same otaku will buy the legit releases. They need to rethink how they look at the American market.
Yep. I agree. I think so much is...
Oh, and great job on the podcast, guys.
Terrific. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Yeah, definite big shout-outs to Dan over at Play Magazine. And he actually writes for their new magazine. And I might get this incorrect. I think it's Geek Monthly or something like that. He's probably going to kill me for not actually knowing that. It's a new magazine they just picked up. He's actually been writing
Geek
for them.
Geek Monthly, really?
Yeah. But I agree with him. Having worked over there for a while, too, I think that's one of the things, and just being kind of involved and connected with people in the industry, I mean, you've got to have that commercial space. I mean, you've got to get out there on the main media outlets in order to get people. I mean... And you're going to want to get people that aren't just the otaku hardcore fans. I mean, people that are not familiar with it that, you know, would go out and buy it on the basis of, oh, that looks cool because that's kind of similar to Death Note or Bleach or whatever they're watching on Adult Swim. I mean, that's the market that they want to get. So I think they would be better suited to be hitting that market a little bit more. So I would agree with them.
But you know what though? Like one thing I've always wondered is that how many people actually go out and buy hentai anime DVDs?
Well, you know, I think that's just kind of like a specific market to itself. I don't think, you know, advertising for that necessarily is. I mean, people that are interested in that are going to probably go buy that. I don't think if you have a commercial on TV for something like that, it would actually probably necessarily help. Maybe an ad in a magazine or something, and I've actually seen...
You know, just for people overseas who don't know what Adult Swim is, this does not mean people naked in the pool and screaming, Marco, Polo, no. This is almost uncensored and unedited version of anime on American TV.
Not just anime, too, actually. There's also, like, it is mostly anime. It's true. They show things like Cowboy Bebop, and they've even show Furikuri, which is amazing, right? If you ask me, actually. But they also have things like Robot Chicken, Aqua Teen Hunger Force, and a bunch.
Captain Ghost.
Yeah. Is Dexter's Lab on there, too? Or I don't remember. It's not, right? Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it used to be on there. I don't think it's been on for a while. But most of the I mean, not on Adult Swim, on Cartoon Network. I mean, most of the shows that are on Adult Swim are very much geared towards
right.
adults. So.
Yeah, most of the
right.
yeah.
who are not naked in the pool screaming Marco Polo.
Yeah,
and I will make this statement that it was in fact Geek Monthly, and that's the one that Dan is actually writing in.
Well,
so I will give a plug for that.
Right, so that pretty much concludes our mailbag section for this. For this episode, keep those comments coming. Leave comments on the comment section of this episode or any previous episode. Don't worry, we will see them. Or actually, send mail to comments@animediet.net.
Yeah, and just to give you something, give you guys some sort of news to chew on, we, congratulations to ourselves, receive our first flame to our first flame. Woohoo! From hell, baby, hell!
Bye-bye.
And guess which one of us got flamed? Not Jeremy, because he's the nice person. Not me, because I'm a nasty person. But Mike, the nicest person of us all.
the least offensive person of us all. I mean, I think Ray and I could maybe get some hate mail, but to actually flame Mike is quite interesting to me. And I will say that this person, unfortunately, was quite incorrect in their characterization of Mike, which is, you know, just shows their not really knowing how things really are.
Yeah, let's just not pick on this poor chap, all right? I mean, he roasted the wrong pig, all right? Let's just leave it at that.
That's what I would say.
All right.
I will coolly pass over that with all of my dignity intact and move on to the next section.
The world is mine!
And we're just going to go ahead and move on to the second half and the final half of this Halloween podcast.
Yes, having called the Noir team.
Yes.
Put a hit on the guy who just flamed us. Sorry, dude. But we got the money and the resources.
And I only hire the best professionals. Yes.
Exactly.
So, in moving on, we are going to be basically just talking about the good, the bad, and are really horrifically ugly so far this season.
Ooh! Ow! Okay.
And so basically, what we've actually decided recently is we've actually gone and split up formally which shows all of us who are on the blog are going to be covering. And mm-hmm. So we're going to be sort of basing a lot of what we're saying tonight on the shows we've decided to cover. And so I will be talking about some of the hits and misses of a lot of the slice of life and more romantic type shows this season. And Jeremy, you'll be doing, I think you said, Kaiji, about the gambler, mm-hmm. as well as the Masamune Shiro production, Ghost Hound.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Ray, what will you be handling? I've already kind of forgotten. I'm sorry.
Oh, come on. And I thought I'm the one who got drunk last night and just woke up this morning. Come on. In any case, yes, I'll be doing, I have a list, but, like, I guess for the podcast, I want to review about Genshiken 2, yes, mm-hmm. and it's a toss-up between Blue Drop and Gundam Balls. Mm-hmm. I think I'll go with Gundam Balls!
Or Gundam Nothing.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Two zeros equals nothing.
Yep.
In any mathematical calculations, except if you divide them by each other, then you get the infinite unknown.
That's right. Mm. Or you get an irrational number, which is actually a pretty good description of that show. But anyway, why don't you start off,
yes,
actually?
Math geek. Yes, yeah. Math geek.
Well, I do want to mention, because, you know, I'll get straight to my shows that I am liking, that I am watching, but we did also mention that we'd also be mentioning the, like you said, the good, the bad, and the ugly, the horrific shows, as well as the good. I did, as I mentioned in one of our last podcasts, that I would be taking a look at Kawaii Jenny, just for kicks. And yes, it was kicks to the groin and the head and various other parts of my anatomy that was... Wow. I have to say, I was doubled over in cramps after watching it. I was kind of interested. I wondered if this kind of might not be, in fact, sort of the robot chicken for anime. But it was, you know, not. So it is a pretty much like a Sailor Moon type story with animated dolls that do not, in fact, have moving lips. But actually, some of the animation of the dolls isn't too bad. The stop motion is not too terrible. But it just, within the first 7 minutes, it was very uninteresting. I mean, it was very, very dull, not funny in any respect. Not even in the sense, in my mind, that it could be poked fun at very well. It was just actually pretty lame.
But yeah, that's I'm sure the little girl inside you really liked that, right?
Yeah, but, you know, the little girl inside me, I just pretty much strangled her to death, so.
Yeah,
just because, yeah, I couldn't bring myself to like that show, so I had to take drastic measures.
Right.
So you wouldn't even call it a show where it's so bad that it's entertaining to make fun of it.
I suppose it could, if you could actually stomach it, watching it enough. I mean, it could probably, you could do a Mystery Science Theater to it, but I don't think it's to me, it doesn't really reach that level of badness. It's like it's almost okay, but it's not. So,
I got two questions. First of all, where did you even find this stuff? I didn't even see it.
Kawaii Jenny, actually, and maybe just a little plug here, I guess, inadvertently, a Crunchyroll is actually where I watched it on. So,
Crunchyroll, yes.
Yeah.
I know about Crunchyroll.
And second of all, I still wonder why you wanted to watch a little girl focused show in the first place.
I don't know what really possessed me to actually watch that. But I will move on to the other shows that I did watch that I did enjoy. First off, I will cover Kaiji, also known as Gambling Apocalypse Kaiji, which sounds terribly ominous, but it's a really angsty show.
It is.
Wow.
Yeah, it is about a guy. It's set in 1995, which is not a particularly good year for Japan. It is during probably one of the worst recessions, economic slumps since World War II. And basically, Kaiji moves to Tokyo straight out of high school to find a job right about then. And so, you know, being 1995, he has all the cool effects of that period. He has the leather bomber jacket with all the different flags on the back and whatnot. But he, when he moves to Tokyo and, of course, can't find a job and becomes one of the original neats, he spends most of his time and resources on liquor, vandalizing expensive cars, and gambling, which brings it to what the story moves into. He also becomes saddled with the debt of someone that he very naively co-signs for, which is in the several zeros range. So is then approached by the Yakuza with an opportunity to actually get out of this
debt. You mean some very, very kind people, right?
Yes, some very, very kind, yes. Nice businessmen with dark sunglasses and Hawaiian style shirts. I think they're just they look kind of rather businessmen, but giving an opportunity to actually construction business, yes, to come out of his debt by going to a gambling tournament, basically on a ship called Espoir, which is French for hope, and basically he's pitted against a bunch of other, shall we say, losers, okay? A bunch of other people in, like, his same position in a game of, hold on to your hats, folks, restricted paper, rock, scissors. Which is so incredibly awesome. Basically, they're given their cards. They're also given loads of cash, as much as they want, up to a limit. They're actually given they can choose as little as want or as much as they want. The trick is that the interest compounds by the minute. So here you have somebody who is just pretty much, for all accounts, kind of just this loser kind of guy who's completely hopeless and is given an opportunity to kind of just fight his way out with Yakuza cash and paper, rock, scissors cards, and the aftermath that happens. Uh-huh. And it's kind of an odd show. I mean, it's very different from anything I've seen before. It actually was a really popular manga. It's actually probably Fukumoto, Nobuyuki Fukumoto was the author. It's probably his most famous work. It was very popular in Korea and Japan. It was actually written in 1997. But like I said, it's a very different work. It has a very interesting feel. It's not, you know, shown in action I mean, there's just not a ton of action, but there is kind of a sense of anxiety of what's going to happen next with this guy and what he's going to do. So it has a great a soundtrack. The opening song is actually really cool. It's kind of a Japanese Sex Pistols-ish punk rock that fully encompasses the slacker angst of Kaji's character. It's actually done by the voice actor for Kaji, Masato Higawara, and a band by the name of Redborn Cherries. So that basically, instead of grunge, it's very, very much punk rock.
Maybe the modern day trend isn't the grunge like in the 90s, but like a slacker punk thing.
Right. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So everybody tells me that this is the badass show of the season. That this is basically the show that isn't. It's for the cool people.
I think it's actually fairly niche. You either will get it or you don't. You'll either like it or you won't.
Wait a minute. You're telling me it's a badass show without explosions, people throwing cards and cards stick on someone's face and explodes. Someone uses stick and beat the crap out of each other.
So far there have been no superpowers, no fight scenes, no explosions, no gun battles, nothing of the sort, just flying cards of paper, rock, scissors.
And nobody uses a pipe and start beat the crap out of somebody, or somebody says, did he just insult us a little bit and whack them in the knees and stab them with a knife? That's pretty much it.
Why don't you go and talk a little bit about Ghost Town?
Okay. I'm going to give a real quick rundown of Ghost Town. I absolutely had to take this this show because I'm a huge fan of Serial Experiments Lane, although I had to fight Mike and Ray to the death because they are also big fans of that show.
That's why we're still alive.
Yes. I'm actually pretty much a zombie at this point, which adds to the horror of the show. But since I did die in the process, they felt sorry for it and gave me the show. But it is based on original creation by Masamune Shirō that was actually done in 1987. So which puts it as Project IG's 20th anniversary project. It is directed and written by the director and writer of Serial Experiments Lane, the director Ryotaro Nakamura, and the writer Chiaki J. Konaka. It's very similar in many ways, a feel to Serial Experiments Lane. The first and most obvious similarity is the first episode is called Focus 01, Lucid Dreams. And if anybody is a fan or has watched Serial Experiments Lane, you probably remember that the first episode in Serial Experiments Lane was Layer 01, Weird. So, I mean, it seems like maybe these episodes are going to be called, and actually they are going to be called Focus 01, 02, and so forth, as Lane was Layer 01, 02, and so forth. The opening song, Poltergeist, by Mayumi Kojima, I thought was rather enjoyable. It worked really well with the tone of the story. I didn't find it, however, to be the duvet of Lane. It wasn't what Duvet was for Lane. And for me, and I don't know about other people, but when I first actually saw the trailer for Lane at Anime Week in Atlanta back in, oh gosh, was this 95, I think? And saw the opening sequence, clips of it for Lane, I was just blown away and hooked. And as I watched the show, each time I watched that opening sequence, I was just... It really moved something in me. So I don't think it was quite the case with this song, but it's good. It really is a good song, and I think it fits the feel. I do have a slight fear that it could become too much like Lane, and not that that would be totally unenjoyable. I just think it might not allow it to reach its full potential. Hmm. The story starts with Komori, a boy who has lucid dreams, where he sees a sister who is kidnapped along with him as a child, laying motionless in a bed in a nondescript room. This story is supposed to follow the experience of apparently three different boys who have had traumatic experiences in childhood, and it leads them to basically have connections with the unseen world, basically.
Mm. I see. Now, Ray, actually, I remember you said you weren't as impressed with it as maybe Jeremy was.
Well, you know how, like, first episodes are slow for a lot of shows. You know, like,
yeah.
Very rarely do you have a show like Suzumi Haru...
Haruhi Suzumiya.
Damn it.
Bless you.
Haruhi... Thank you. Haruhi Suzumiya, that's it. Or something like Samurai 7. You know, like, first episode, it's like, dun-dun-dun-dun, the music goes up, and you're like, oh my god, you know, like, mm-hmm. the sword, and then, like, this whole fleet of people fighting. You know, nothing... Most shows don't go out like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And... But the thing is that it's funny because I've had many lucid dreams where I will go, I will dream of people I've never seen before. You will be in some familiar mm-hmm. setting, like in high school or in college, mm-hmm. or sometimes it's mm-hmm. people from my elementary school back in Taiwan long ago, and then people mm-hmm. and then peeps from United States in the same classroom for some reason at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I've seen strange things in my dream before. I wouldn't say I'm not as impressed as much as more like, because it's slow and, you know, like, I've seen many strange things in my life anyway, that mm-hmm. it didn't strike me as much. I do think the concept is interesting though, but if you boil it down, it's out of body experience basically.
Yeah, I think right. it is, once again. I think both these shows are very, very niche shows. I think you will actually, like I said, same with Kaji, you will either get it or you won't. If you're fans of Serial Experiments Lane, there's a good possibility that you'll like the show. It's a very heady show, I think. I think it's going to be, from what I'm getting from the next episode, referencing, of all people, Francis Crick. And oh, what he has to say about dreams, who was...
He's one of the co-discoverers of DNA.
Indeed. A well-known atheist, and having some thoughts on spiritualism and whatnot that he talked about. And he basically, it quotes him as having said that dreams are meaningless, just the brain removing trivial recollections from the cerebrum, and nothing more than a signal in the 40 hertz range causing sympathetic reactions in the brain. I mean, you can't get more heady than that. I mean, the next title of the next episode is I Move It Let me see if I can say this right. Desensitization and reprocessing. Desensitization. Huh. Yeah, that's it. Desensitization and reprocessing. EMDR for short. And apparently this is a psychotherapeutic approach developed by Francis Shapiro to resolve symptoms resulting from exposure to traumatic or distressing events.
Man, I really should have tried to fight you even harder then for this show. This sounds exactly like this.
No. You were in EVA 13 again, and Jeremy totally whoop your ass.
I think this is going to be a challenge to me to write about. And actually, it's good, I think, because it's going to bring me to doing a lot of research about some of the things in it. I remember watching Lane and seeing some of the references that pop up in Lane and looking them up on the internet and trying to figure out the correlations between them. And really, I think both of these shows will be, as Lane was, a very, very thinking man show, or at least push somebody to really think, if they so desire to. If you don't want to think, basically probably you shouldn't watch this show. You know, if a thinking show is not for you, if you just want to see lots of explosions and cool fighting scenes or laugh your ass off, it's not the show for you.
Yeah.
But
yep.
Explosions.
Anyhow, that's...
Okay, Ray, why don't you tell us about the good, the bad, and the horrific this
season?
Okay,
first I would just like to say, when Jeremy said niche shows, I was thinking, niche in anime? Wow. Anime is a niche, just for case for any of you who didn't understand what I was saying. And just kidding. Anyhow, so I am going to talk about Genshiken 2 first. Okay, so what is Genshiken 2? Well, with my critical self, really, it's a slice of otaku life in college. Okay, maybe, yeah, you know, like season 1 was you had to done some of the things and you would like them. Season 2 was more like focus. It's focused on the Sasahara, who was only a newbie in season 1, and now he's the kaijo. He's the chairperson of club president, I'm sorry. He's a club president of the club, basically. You know, I'm best with impressions, so all I'm gonna say is that I was really impressed by episode 2's opening. It was really funny because I was like, oh, Genshiken, you know, okay, they have the rock sort of rock and pop music of season 1, and then all of a sudden they play Gundam style music, Gundam C style anyway music. I was like, wait a minute, this is not the music supposed to be music for it, and I just started to proceed to laugh my ass off from there. It was super funny with all the Gundam references, trust me. And, you know, girls were spinning and bouncing and going all over the place, like Gundam Sea, and guys were having those cheesy, staring moments, and, you know, and there are people who got naked for no reason whatsoever, you know, just like Gundam Sea. So in any case, yeah, I think I personally think it's a great show for Otaku to watch. But if you want to be me really, really honest about it, it's kind of flat. It's kind of plain. I mean, there are funny moments. Mm. But not as much as season 1, where they keep on coming with references and, you know, like awkward, like some of those awkward, like sometimes awkward moments, and where Saki, which is the only member of Genshiken who's not an otaku at all, you know, like starts smacking people. And yeah, it's a little bit flat, but of course, it's only on episode 4, 3, 4. Mm. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm the kind of person, you see, I've had this awful record of prejudging shows too quickly. And my guess is that, like, if you just watched episode 1 of Genshiken season 2, you would also think it is pretty flat and it's not nearly as humorous as the first season. Then you watch the actual opening sequence.
Of episode 2, exactly.
You know, which is one parody of Gundam after another. And you know that, yeah. They still got it. Or maybe they poured all of their humor into just that one sequence. I don't know. Based on what you were
saying. Yeah, it's possible. But for those of you who read the manga, you know there's going to be a fun, really American character was coming up. Yes. And for those of you who don't watch the manga, please wait for her. She is going to be played by Goto Yuko.
Ooh,
and,
nice.
You know, like, there's...
Is she going to speak in Janglish?
Yes, Japanglish. Yes, yes, she probably will be. And I'm thinking a few things they could do with, you know, her hobbies. Like, one of her pastime is to watch Fist of the North Star. And he didn't watch it for any yaoi elements at all. She watched it for what it is, a bloody action shonen show. And she can talk about it with a lot of men. Yes.
Ah, I see. She's one of those people. She likes her men gar. I see.
Mike, that's not a good sign if you actually understood what you just said.
You know, they actually have a Saigar tournament alongside the Saimoe tournament.
I don't.
And it's run
really
by men,
know.
Too.
I really don't want to know. Okay, I'm sorry. So, like, I'm going to go down with Gundam 00. So, basically... How can I say it? It's got a great concept, believe it or not. Instead of in Gundam, we're saying, oh, you know, this organization is evil. We're going to strike them down, use terrorist actions, which causes damage to everyone else, even though they say, oh, we only attack military targets. In this, basically, the backstory it goes, well, you know, there's the oil has been used up, and, you know, like, the world split into three factions, and everybody tried to get the solar power, basically. We, Li, are one of the factions, and China leads another faction, and so on and so forth. So, a group of people call themselves Celestial Beings comes down and try to... they're basically starting a stampede to stop a stampede, or starting a fire to stop a fire. That's what they're doing. And, you know, all I got to say is that the animation is great so far. You know, I'm pretty impressed with it. And the story-wise, it seems like some of the characters notices their inconsistencies of their actions. That's good. A show that doesn't take itself too serious. It's not humor, but a show doesn't take its own concept too seriously or too extremely and doesn't see like how ridiculous it can be. And so we have...
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. I just want to show this show to my Christian ethics professor here at my school because he's a pacifist.
And I
just got to mention this idea. There's a group that literally calls itself God,
yes,
celestial
that's right.
being, whose goal is to eliminate war by making war on everybody. I just want to watch his head explode. when I mentioned that whole concept.
Yeah, it's nice. It's very. It's a very great. It's very.
Why not show him Fist of the North Star as well?
Yeah. People actually with their heads exploding.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, you could actually like play that as his head is actually exploding as you're showing in the other show. Mm-hmm. You could play a clip of it.
Ooh, side by side. Postmodern side by side. Style. Postmodern style.
Make,
of,
yeah, postmodern film. Make a short film of it, and we could host it on here.
Yeah, and play some music.
I smell a new anime diet project in the works.
Oh, our new quote-unquote feature for the future. Yep. But then, yeah, my review, that wasn't very good. But I think this wasn't a horrific show. It was good, good. And Genshiken was good, good. Uh-huh. So nothing horrific for me to talk about. The only thing about Gundam 00 is that it continues the Gundam Sea, Gundam Wing shonen. Hey, let's do each other in the asses, but let's not tell the fan story, because all these yaoi boys in there, and one of the pilot is a girl. Oh, actually, no, he's not a girl. He just dresses, looks like a girl, and he has the hair, and he wears glasses. I'm sure half of the guys wanted to jump his bones, and then they realize, oh, fuck, it's a girl.
Jeez.
Boy. Girl.
Oh, wait, so is he a trap, or just does he just look like a trap?
He looks like one.
Oh,
okay, and I did not understand what you just said, Mike. That's bad.
Oh, you guys know what a trap is?
I know. I can
only guess.
A trap is basically a guy who dresses up very convincingly like a girl, and everybody thinks it's a girl until you find out there's some big dark secret. Okay, so this is a season where, for some very odd and probably somewhat coincidental reason, because of the release schedule on AnimeSuki.com, I ended up covering most of the slice of life, romance, and harem shows this season. And it has nothing to do with either my sexuality, my fantasies, or my wish fulfillment desires. Though, in one particular show, there was one character which I did find very appealing, but we'll get to that in just one moment. But basically, I've been covering things like Clannade, Kimi Kiss Pure Rouge, EF Pure... no, what's it called? EF A Tale of Memories... And as well as another kind of a slice of life sketch comedy like Minami K. That's actually one of the big surprises this season. And I'm going to include, first I'm going to talk about the shows that really surprised me for what they were. And under that category, I would put Minami K and I would put EF A Tale of Memories. Now, I remember looking at the preview for EF and I remember being very impressed with the music. Because the music is done by the same guy who composes all the music for Makoto Shinkai stuff, Tenmon. So it's all very beautiful, a lot of piano, very pretty, that sort of thing. And so you would have Tenmon music, and you would have some pretty beautiful animation. But the thing is that I could tell immediately by the character designs that this was based on some like eroge. Like, you can always just tell. The character designs are always just kind of look like that. If anything, it really reminded me of Sola, which was another show that seemed to have initially some promise in the beginning, but ended up being rather ho-hum. And so I remember I put it at the very end of my fall preview. And then after I watched episode one, I still kind of dissed it. I still thought it was needlessly artsy. And I still thought it was just kind of dull, and it engaged in a lot of the typical concepts you see in a lot of those kind of shows. It really took until episode two for me to get it. Because, first of all, it's actually directed, or not actually directed, it's supervised by the guy who does Sayonara Zatsubo Sensei. His name is Shinbo. He is well known not just for Sayonara Zatsubo Sensei the past season, but also Pony Pony Dash. He has a very instantly recognizable style. Like, anyone who's seen any of his work will know it. He has lots of very, you know, interesting color palettes, very abstract sequences, and lots of close-up of eyes. That's his big thing. That's, like, his stylistic trademark. And he does it all over the place in EF A Tale of Memories. And the thing I really admire about the show is how well it holds together. You see, as the subtitle of the show implies, it's a tale of memories. And the tagline of the show is, do you have memories that you don't want to forget? Now, at first, Guys, doesn't that sound like a very typical kind of tagline that you would hear, like, for a game, like a dating type game? I mean, that sounds
or
so
a
generic.
A tagline for Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
I mean, well, and that's a very interesting connection you're making, Jeremy, because in many ways it is a lot like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, at least in some of its incidentals. Because, yes, that, without giving away a major spoiler in episode 2 and 3, I can safely say, though, that that tagline has a very literal meaning
right.
in the show. That actually is played out in very meaningful ways, both in the style, the way the show is done, is a very much like memory. It's very stream of consciousness, very subjective. It's trying to actually capture the sensation of trying to remember things in your head and dreams. And I find that very impressive, particularly because all the main male characters in the show are artists. And so all of them are trying to see in a different way. And so a big part of the show is about these characters trying to learn to see in their own unique way. And so EF has unbelievably become, for me, the most like intellectually interesting show of the season. Though I haven't seen Ghost
Town. But does it reference Francis Crick?
No, see, it doesn't do name dropping yet. It hasn't.
Just kidding.
Yeah. I'm a sucker for name dropping. I know. I totally understand. I know. I mean, I get very excited when I see people like quoting real philosophers and Bible quotes in anime. But it's like, but I mean, for me, it's just completely surpassed my expectations. And I have to admit, a lot of my expectations were low because I have a really strong prejudice for that genre. And
that's right. It jumps out and surprised you, didn't it? Huh?
Oh yeah, it jumped out of the bushes and like assaulted me and like tried to take all my money. But
I was thinking, good thing you didn't try to take over your clothes.
Oh, look, you've already put all these other images in people's heads. Will you please stop?
I am sorry. I just thought, you know, people should know like how beautiful, how handsome looking the hosts of this show are.
I'll pretend that I didn't hear that, and I'll pretend that that doesn't put my entire view of your sexuality.
Oi!
All right. In either case, my other good surprise of the season was Minami-K. Minami-K was a show I did not know anything about at all when I first saw it, and I remember when I first saw episode 1, it was okay. I didn't think it was bad. By any rate, but I wasn't bowled over by it either. It's a story about three sisters who live together. They're all in school, and they all have very different personalities. The oldest one, you know, is a very motherly type, and the middle one is like basically like Tomo-chan in Azumanga Daioh. She's a dumb, energetic idiot, and then there's the youngest sister who is this extremely cynical, intelligent, world-weary person. Who always makes lots of sarcastic comments.
You know what? That could be like kind of sum up us, basically. We could have our own character there. I'm not going to say who's who, because that would just be insulting.
Oi!
Oi!
What are you insinuating, Jeremy? But in either case, the first episode, I just thought, well, yeah, it's not bad. It's an easy-to-watch show. It's one of those shows. And I probably won't be blogging about it. But I was surprised to the degree, after I watched episode 2 and 3, that not only did the character humor really come out really strongly, really well, but to me, the show got wittier and wittier. And it also got more and more slapstick at the same time. And so you really get to have a very good sense of who the three sisters are and how they interact with each other. So it stands somewhere in between Azumanga Daioh and Lucky Star in that sense, in that it's split generally into three kind of short stories, three vignettes. But unlike Lucky Star, all of them are connected in some way. So often at the very end of the third vignette, there's like some couple of gags or jokes that tie everything together. It's a lot like Seinfeld in that way, actually. So they usually find a clever way of actually bringing everything home, which impresses me. And unlike Azumanga Daioh and Lucky Star, it has a relatively small cast. So you get to see, you know, the characters develop a little bit deeper, I think, than at an earlier stage than you do with some of the with those other two shows. Though I love those other two shows, you know, especially Azumanga Daioh. Azumanga Daioh still holds the record for me as for funniest show ever. But it's actually looking very promising now, and this is one of the few shows this season which is actually making me laugh out loud, as opposed to like yelling at the screen in frustration at how stupid everything is. Or yelling at the protagonist to just grow a spine already.
Right.
Stop sleeping with all the girls.
No, that was last season. That was that other show with the nice boat. But
which helped you practice your techniques on Stabby Stab.
Oh, yeah. But I've already covered that. I don't ever want to talk about school days ever again. So, but in either case, finally, I just want to talk about some of the shows that weren't so great. Or actually, no. I just want to talk about one more show because I've already made a confession about it. And that's Kimi Kiss Pure Rouge. I'm infamous because I posted a very negative review of the first episode. I actually said the title was Yawn. And I even included a little sound clip of Homer calling it boring. I think I got quite a number of negative emails or negative comments regarding that review. And, well, after watching episodes 2 to 3, I repent. I repent in dust and ashes. I fall down in front of your feet. Mea culpa, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa. You are right. I actually really like this show now. I totally misjudged it in the first episode. I misjudged it because I thought it was going to be a typical harem anime, which it isn't. I thought it was going to indulge in every single one of the cliches that I really loathe about game adaptations, and that only happens maybe one third of the time. And I thought that the Honey and Clover director, who's actually the one who's directing this, was basically trying his best to turn straw into gold. He was going to take really bad source material and try his best, but I was so skeptical that it wouldn't work. It's starting to work better and better with every episode. Now, I admit, it's because I have a crush on one of the characters.
The truth comes out, Mike.
Yeah, I have something of an anime crush on Mao, the first girl that you meet.
I was afraid you might say Kazuki. I'm just kidding.
I kid. Yes, and she's basically the kind of the older childhood friend sister character type character, who basically barges into the main guy's house one day. He doesn't even recognize her, and though I did find that part a little bit unbelievable because they'd only been apart for 2 years. I can't see people changing that fast that they become virtually unrecognizable. But in either case, they have a very comfortable relationship. And later on, the very worrying scenario happens in which Mao, in an effort to try to get her childhood friend together with this really shy girl named Yumi together, wants to train him in being cool. You see, the reason why this is worrying is because that is exactly the way school days started. But of course, the main difference is that Mao has a love interest. Like this Bishonen saxophone player. He's antisocial and really strong and silent and that sort of thing. And that alone makes it quite a different show than this kind of thing usually comes out to be. And there's not only that, Koichi is not the only guy. There's another guy who has his own problems and his own love interests. And so it's really more just a general romance, high school romance show, more than anything else. No, it's not as cleverly written, and it's not as insightful as either Nodame or Honey and Clover, which was the director's previous works. But it is very enjoyable. I like watching Mao. I like the art style. The art style is also very reminiscent of Honey and Clover at times. And so it's probably my favorite romance show other than Clannad. And Clannad was also surprisingly good as well. But I've been covering that in my blog posts already. And since we're running low on time, I think we go ahead and wrap this episode up. Well, so, this ends the blood curdling episode Halloween special of Anime Diet Radio episode number 15. I am your terribly frightening, confused, angst-ridden, and not entirely sure about his masculinity host, Michael Huang.
And don't make me come on and get you and bite you on the neck, chump, Raymond Hugh.
I'm the living among the Hollywood zombies host, Jeremy from Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. See you all next time.